I did not anticipate to write a book. It came at the last minute. I was at a conference in March in Phoenix, Arizona, a large conference with entrepreneurs from all over the world, and the guest speaker got up and started slamming farming, farm crop protection products, fertilizer, and canola oil, and you name it, and basically everything I've done in my life was getting slammed. And it was a large crowd, and I was apprehensive to get up and on the mic and fight with the guy. I didn't feel I was totally prepared enough to do that. So I didn't do anything, and that really bothered me. But at the end of the thing, I went up to both speakers and said, look, everything you've said is complete misinformation. And I feel really bad about that, so what do I have to do to correct that misinformation? And they said, well, prove what we said was incorrect. So I actually ended up writing a 45-page letter to them with every statement they made, and then backing it up with peer-reviewed research to basically have a critical analysis. I think critical thinking is a big thing. So if you critically think it through, at the end of the day, I was able to get them to have a conversation with me about it.
The book is directed mainly at a consumer audience, and you've written it in fairly simple to understand terms and using analogies. Why is that important?
Well, so if you read the dedication at the front of the book, it's dedicated to two segments. Number one, the consumer, but primarily the grocery shopper. Those are the people I want to have the conversation with because they're the ones that are getting misinformation, and these are good people. It's not their fault that they have misinformation. It's just that I don't believe our ag industry and farmers are telling our story. And if they're not hearing our story, they're going to believe the story they are being told.
What is that story?
Well, that story is primarily that they don't necessarily trust food. They have misconceptions about genetically modified crops and how we use them to advance agriculture. They have misconceptions about what a crop protection product, or they call them chemicals, are. They'll put a chemical on their armpits every morning before they go to work and not think twice about it, but then have a misconception that us as farmers are abusing those same types of chemicals and hurting their food.
Do you explain in the book that it's really not in the farmer's best interest to apply too much crop protection products?
Well, of course, farmers know that. I mean, the interesting thing is most consumers are asking the same questions every farmer would ask. So when new technology comes out, i.e. a new crop protection weed spray, the first thing a farmer asks is, how safe is it? How safe is it on me and my kids? How safe is it on the food I grow? So actually, farmers are the screen. They're the first level of defense to ensure these products are safe and work properly. And of course, they're like Tylenol. Take 2 Tylenol and you'll cure your headache. Take 10 and you'll probably end up in the hospital. Well, it's the same with crop protection products. They're very specific when they can be used and how much they can be used.
How much work goes into making sure that these products are safe so that when they're applied on the product that consumers are completely safe?
Well, that's where I have the complete faith in this. A lot of people hear primarily news out of the U.S. that some big company paid off a senator to register a new product, and that's completely false. Sometimes the U.S. thinks the world revolves around them, and it actually doesn't. Actually, 138 countries in the world have gotten together, all the scientific people, and said, look, if we're going to register a new compound, whether it's antiperspirant, a cleaning agent, or a crop protection product, we need to have a way to evaluate these things to see if they're safe for society and what risks they pose. And so every new product actually goes through like 138 researchers in 138 countries, literally. I mean, not all countries at the same time, but the standard has been set internationally. And I have a lot of faith in that standard and that no one government can really corrupt it because it's a peer-reviewed type of science.
Now, a lot of this technology is used so we can grow enough food for the population in the world. Now, some people would like to maybe, you know, think that organics might be the answer, and there's nothing wrong with organics, but the issue is that you just don't produce as much food, and the cost of it is a lot higher for the consumer, and not everybody can afford to pay that.
That's right. I myself have a lot of respect for organic, all farmers, organic or commercial. And I think organic farmers are just trying to accomplish the same goal as we are, to grow safe food. The real issue with organics is it's difficult to have a high enough level of production. Actually, you know, RFK is now going to make America healthy again, and there's chatter on the news media that he's going to make a law that says all farms have to produce organic food. Well, that'll never happen, because we know that if you quit using fertilizer and weed control worldwide, that we would actually be starving about 4 billion people today if not for the fact that we have commercial fertilizer and weed control. Isn't that amazing? 4 billion people would be starving today without commercial farming. And organic cannot be sustainable enough to feed that many people.
And RFK, or Robert Kennedy Jr., not a big fan of canola oil either. And he's also saying a lot of very quote-unquote interesting things about that.
Yeah, and you'll notice that whenever these people say what I call fear-mongering, they always make a statement like, they'll say something like, seed oils are causing a chronic disease epidemic. And those are big words and scare the hell out of people. Well, by the way, there's like 10 seed oils, and they're all very different. It's like if you compare the different seed oils, safflower oil to canola oil, it's like comparing a Volkswagen with no airbags to a Volvo with complete safe airbags in terms of a car accident. So I always narrow it down. I say, okay, let's be specific. Which seed oil are you talking about, and which chronic disease? Because there's 10 chronic diseases. Of course, they never know. They just talk in generalities. And we as consumers are absorbing this information need to be critical thinkers and ask these questions. And that's really what the conversation needs to be. I'm not scared to answer any of these questions. Do we have all the answers? No. But it should be a friendly conversation between the consumer and us, the farmers, who are actually the keepers of the gate.
You mentioned society now. We're so used to getting information in bite-sized pieces. The challenge is trying to convey more complex thoughts to people so they do think about it, rather than just ingest simple, easy to understand lines.
Actually, yeah, no, that's an interesting point. I was thinking, you know, it's January, and in January everybody has New Year's resolutions, and we have New Year's resolutions for weight and diet and, you know, habits that we form. And I was going to suggest that people pick up a new New Year's resolution, and that is to practice the habit of critical thinking. And critical thinking means that, you know, at the end of the day, this isn't a conversation about good or bad. It's not about who's right or wrong. It's about understanding. And if you want to have understanding, you have to have critical thinking. And that means reading one tweet with one sentence isn't going to get you to the bottom of the discussion. And I want to have these conversations with critical thinkers. We need more critical thinkers, and I'd urge everybody to look it up and take on a new habit called critical thinking.
Do you think consumer trust in farmers is still there? And what's their perception of a farmer? Like, do they, you know, make a difference between, you know, a small farmer that may have a few thousand acres versus a very large operation that, you know, has many employees and 20, 30, 40, 50,000 acres?
Well, you know, that's an interesting comment. About 88% of all farms in North America are family farms, and some of them are very large. And it's odd to me that why some businesses can grow or own two or three different retail stores or three or four or six real estate houses as a business, but it's not okay for a farmer to get bigger. And I mean, economies of scale are forcing farms to get bigger. These farms may be big, but they still have what we call family values. An interesting thing is that the Canadian government has actually done a survey, and 90% of people trust what farmers say. And so my book is actually going to be a tool for farmers to tell their story. You know, we've had chemical companies and fertilizer companies and retailers like myself trying to tell the story. We're not trusted as much as a farmer. Now, I'm a farmer and involved in the ag business. When I speak as a farmer, I get the attention of most people, and they do listen because they know that farmers are I think, ethical, practical, they have kids growing up eating the same food that they're going to grow for you. So they really are keepers of the gate.
Yeah, you mentioned these farms going from one generation to the next, and you see the young children on the farm, and the farmer wants to pass that on to his son or daughter.
Absolutely, and farms are stay-ups. You hear about startups, and there's always excitement about a new startup company, but you think about farms. These farms are stay-ups. I myself am a fourth-generation farmer. My great-grandfather came from the old country, Russia primarily, and Ukraine, and broke the land, and I'm the fourth one to take it over. And I believe that through the 30s, we did some pretty nasty things to our land because we didn't understand how to farm. But now with direct seeding and everything, I think our soil's never been in better shape, and we've been practicing regenerative ag ever since we started direct seeding. That is exciting.
What sort of new technologies are you excited about?
Well, there's so many new technologies that most consumers don't realize. The soil testing that we do, we use variable rate. Fertilizer is expensive, and people think, well, we just pour those things on, but we don't. I think when we build a nutrition program for a crop, we actually do a better job of feeding our crops than we do ourselves a lot of times. Mm-hmm. So the technology, the types of fertilizers we're using are getting better all the time. We're focused on how much can get into the environment. We want to target the plants to get the products, not the waterways. And actually in Saskatchewan, we do a great job of that. The Saskatchewan River is very clean.
So tell us about the launch of this book. You're going to be at McNally Robinson this week. Tell us about that, and then you're going to be at the Crop Production Show next week.
Yes, that's correct. So Thursday night this week, January 9th at 7 p.m., I'll be at the McNally Bookstore talking about my book and doing a book signing if people would like that. And I appreciate McNally Robinson promoting the book for me. And if you're a farmer, come out and get one so you can basically buy it, read it, and then give it to one of your urban consumer friends or a school teacher and have them read it and start a new conversation. And then, of course, we will be at the Crop Production Show with a book booth promoting our book and selling books there.
So which booth there are you going to be at? Or?
We're in Jubilee Building A, and I apologize, I don't remember the number. It's 196 or 156, but we're in Jubilee Building A at the Crop Production Show, and just look for What a Farmer Wants You to Know About Food. The other thing we'll be promoting is a website we've launched, trustyourplate.com. If they're listening right now, they should follow that. Trustyourplate.com is going to be the website that is the nucleus for all farms to go on there and maybe tell their stories.
Great, Dennis. Thanks for writing the book, and thanks for coming in to talk to us today.
I appreciate the time, and I appreciate the opportunity to be involved in agribusiness, and I'm pretty excited to talk about the book and actually start having deeper conversations about farming and food production.